Support this podcast at patreon.com/rednews.
Right, it's Red News Podcast 189 after Brighton. Everyone's gutted. There were literally seagulls on the walk back from Brighton station down, and they could have shat on us, and that's a metaphysical or whatever view on the game. How many times in football will you ever see a team get a penalty like that at the end, like we did lockdown, and then see it happen against you? And after doing them in penalties at Wembley, sometimes karma can fucking kick you back in the bollocks. And it happened, and this team, there's something about this fixture. I thought, I've made copious notes during the game. We know we can't finish. We know we're a striker short. We know we're struggling up top. No one wants to talk football. They're giving me the look. We just didn't keep the ball. People said the first half was good. I thought the first half was okay. Again, if we have a striker up top, Anthony Martial was wearing gloves in May. I can't... Do you know that I thought today, Anthony Martial, Amblin, and it's not just him, but he's the figurehead, and like Bruno was chasing down their keeper, and Martial was going out wide, and if Martial does that role, but I thought while he ambled during the second half, it's like when Chloe, who I love, but she says, will you put the washing out, Barney? And I amble, and I huff, and I go...
if I must.
Yeah, and it's like... Do have to do this? It's like... So I huff and I puff, and I go... And then she goes, you haven't done it right. So I go, well, don't ask me to have done that. And that was what I thought when Anthony Martial... And someone cruelly, because I was angry about him wearing gloves in May... And he went, but you're wearing a hat. And I said, but I'm bald. And I'm wearing the hat because we hadn't lost till today, so the hat is getting bent.
Maybe it affects his balance.
Our away form is now terrible. So it's gone from official, from worrying, to bad, to terrible. We're getting done with late goals. Lars from Norway, who I met, who's a great lad, runs his 300th game. United game from Norway. Fair play. Casemiro now worries me that I think, and fair play, didn't get sent off, but when he got the yellow, I was like, oh God, don't get suspended for June the 3rd, which is like creeping up as fucking angst in my already angst ridden head. Yeah. Cut to the chase. If we don't make top four now, we don't deserve to make top four. That's even with the position we are, knowing our away form, knowing we need a striker, that side. I like the way the De Gea thing, when it hit him in the head, I checked the group chat and Wazza just went, it's a bag of air, get up.
Really?
It's a bag of air, get up, when it hit him. I thought Aaron Wan-Bissaka was excellent first half. We did well defensively. Short and Vic were assured. One set piece we did all right when we had a corner.
Oh, sure, was excellent.
We had one set piece, but why do we keep going short with our corners? Get it in there. You're not going to score by pitter-pattering around.
Goal kicks, corners.
And we want, I thought we wanted to slow the whole game down for getting a draw, and then we didn't really know anything else more than that. And finally, thanks for the people who bought the mag, but I've got a way to make millions here. They had loads of sniffer dogs outside, and a good few reds got done by the sniffer dogs, who seemed on heat. Spurs and this end, they've had loads of sniffer dogs and then taking reds out. So I said, my plan is we buy lots of yellow bibs at football grounds, and we buy sniffer dogs off the internet, and then we patrol football grounds and we take drugs off people and then sell them like Breaking Bad and make a million.
We're going to have a party.
Right, so, but anyway.
Even that, Barney, so... So there's a story that I'm not going to show anyone down the river to, but that I know about a sniffer dog incident where there was a...
Now we've got a United Kingdom...
where there was a ball thrown around some sniffer dogs to get them interested in the ball, rather than, so everyone just kind of piled through with a lot of drugs in hand. So if you've got red nose written on the ball, maybe that's the answer.
So,
but mind you, I'm not sure advertising for sniffer dogs is probably...
No. Pat, you're on the podcast. What did you make of that?
Sorry?
What did you make of that? You're on the podcast with my...
Oh, stop.
You are. What did you make of it?
Honey, can't believe you've gone totally bald. Are you shaving the whole head now?
No.
Oh, you are. Hey, it makes your ears look good.
You already were, Pat. Right, you're on the podcast.
Right,
what did you make of that?
Today?
Yeah.
I think we're very, very tired. Last 20 minutes. I just feel that the whole team knows in the last 20 minutes we're going to struggle. The manager then feels that he's under a little bit of pressure, but I don't think he makes the right decisions at the right time for the right substitutions. But has he
done? Options has he got?
The options are, Bonnie, and I'm going to say this now, right? The options are, right? He either gets to the chalice and knows where we're at. Yeah? Like, we've got a cup final coming up now. So, if we had got a result tonight, which was a 0-0, which was a result, we go to West Ham, like we're all looking, get a result, then he can rest players. Now he can't, because we're looking going into the cup final. And he needs to have these players on tip-top form. And if they're not, Barney, we're going to be...
I agree with that. Brighton are a very... They won't... But Brighton are a very good side. Right in form, you know. So, like, I do think... And they had a point to prove. What's worrying is Newcastle had a point to prove. Brighton had a point to prove. And if that last 30 seconds VAR hadn't have happened, we'd all be really, you know, like, job done, dullish, okay-ish. I've never seen a game with so many stoppages as today. The amount of both sides, like, breaking up play, you know, like free kicks, delayed. We know we're not in form.
Barney, are we being serious now? Are we going to now start crying about a couple of free kicks, crying about this?
No.
Barney,
no,
listen.
No,
I'm going to say this to you, right? I think we're tired. I think we are, and there's been a lot of games, but surely the management, I've got to say this, you know, we got Pellestri on the bench. We don't even give, like, he can run at people, give us a little bit of a break. So as much as, listen, I won't slag the manager, I do think going forward this is brilliant where we're going, the transaction, but I just feel that he should maybe look at getting fresh legs on the pitch, giving lads a break, and it's not happening.
We slugged him off for making them too early at Seville at home. The collective win. So, like,
right, okay.
What's it to do?
All right. And we're not wrong. Where are we then? That competition out. Right. Go ahead, Barney. Where are we? We're out. So, maybe as fans, yeah, we were right. So, I'm saying, listen, get us across the line here, which we know we're so close. Yeah, how bad would it be if they caught us? Oh, my God.
What?
How bad would it be? Barney, I want you to answer. No, I want you to answer that question. How bad would it be if they
won't happen? We will make top four, and yes, then we'll win during the third.
Yes, Barney, so you're so confident. Talk me through that during the third. Why? Talk me through that.
Because at United, you've always got to have hope. You've got to have hope at United.
Yes.
If we don't have hope, and we've done it before, we'll do it again, you know, and then it's all getting... Hang on, let's pause this. Hey, hang on. I know you hate these things, so I'm asking you to start again. Yeah.
About today, I was really frustrated. I was really, really confident as the game went on. As the game went on, that we'd get a draw. I was really happy with the draw. And then, in fairness to Brighton, I thought they had the better half of the second half. the second half, if you like. Whatever, they were turning on a bit. But it's gutting to lose right in the death like that.
And they would celebrate. I don't know, like football comes along and gives you these kicks up the arses.
I've thought for a while now, everyone thinks I'm being, as I am, Mr. Pessimistic. I think we're struggling for top four, if I'm honest. I'm really,
I honestly can't contemplate missing out on it. And I do think we're 4 points, like United side, 4 points clear, this close to the end of the season, with a game in hand. If we don't do it, then.
Yeah, but West Ham, first of all. I did always think
we never take the draw today. I know. Yeah, but we never do well. They're not very good. No, and you could tell they had an illness bug at fucking City. They'd all be back for Sunday.
We never do well.
But we've got to start. The one thing is, we have to start doing these better at ways. I know, like, but Eric, what I liked about him on the press conference for this, he was asked, you know, do you feel satisfaction where this season could be? And he went, no, because like if you start thinking about satisfaction, you get lazy. So I could see why he held on for the subs today. I don't agree with.
I get it, but
I'm less pessimistic than this miserable bastard. But
don't be like that.
I don't see, you look at the Scouts' fixtures and everything, I don't see everyone taking maximum points. Yeah, we are. We know we are. We've been there all season.
What did you think of the whole game? I thought we played, we tried to slow it down and then it became
We went for a draw rather than we should have gone for a win.
If it was the World Cup minutes added on, it would have been about 45.
I think we went for a draw against a side that are, football wise, are way ahead of us. I mean, if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do, genuinely. Because I think that their football.
Miritone, they're a good, and they play out the back. It did make. Do you remember when Dunk. And we are missing Varane and Martinez, and Martinez is forward passing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see Dunk play that?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Set,
no, but you're talking about.
Like, fucking hell, we don't.
Yeah. But you're talking about a team that was dicked after the best teams in the league. Like,
what did you make of today?
Brighton are a better side than us, like, in terms of their general ability to play football. We've got better players, but
they're individuals, but collectively
they're a better team. And actually, I would have taken a draw, and I thought we deserved. But what I would say is, I thought we deserved a draw. I think we are done by a loss. But I do think over the next few weeks, because we've got three home games still to come.
We'll get those.
I think nine points is easy enough. Unless these Scousers put out something out of the bag, like, you look at the Scouser fixtures, they'll have to do very well to get
points. Yeah, but it's law that some teams, including that lot and that lot, start ending the season really well.
But they've got to play all of them. That's the point.
But we had an effortless post World Cup period. We went, what is it, one defeat in 23 or 24? Where's that form? But I know we're tired. Where's that United gone?
I just think they're knackered.
Yes.
Well, and I'll always come back to the book. I hate comparing us to them because they're the most snidey, fucking horrible cunts you've ever got in football. But they had a very successful 3 or 4 years. But do you remember when Klopp turned up at Liverpool and they had a good period and they died a death at it? And we've not seen our players run around as much as they have done. So if we were having this conversation 2 months ago, what were we talking about? Endeavour, effort. I think they've just hit the end of a tether in a way. But it takes a very long time to get that endurance, ability to just play 65 games of football in that to that intensity.
We can't and go I just think we're unmaintained. I just think we're there. Last season. And again here, we're not getting, maybe people won't agree, but we're not getting fucking tight. We're not getting, you know, we're giving them a game now. And make people wonder, and that sounds Ralph, so actually I apologise for that, because that sounds clutching at straws. It does though, but I get equally, like Rashford looks like that, and there's no one else to bring it. And going back, I would prefer Woot to Martial. If Woot scores were on the pitch, because that was like four lads, it becomes like. But it's true, but I didn't like it.
My thing is, about Woot is he's like a nice escape giraffe. But he does try his best. He does give 100%,
but more than Martial does.
Yeah, he tries to shut people down. Martial, historically, I've always supported Martial, but it's just not good enough now. There's something in there, but it's not going to come out for us.
Final words then.
Final word. Onward and upward. Let's hope for a win at West Ham.
We'll be alright.
I'll be gutted if we don't. The whole thing is like impending doom. I don't want to be in May. My zen for United was so good.
Yeah.
I don't want it cascading.
Yeah,
every time they drag you out, they pull you back in.
To the man we all love and miss. Love and miss. In morning. You Scouse bastards. Fuck them all.
All right. Support the Red News sub campaign. Now just 70 off target and we carry on. Glory, glory, Man United.
Right, so if you think what got played then just prior to this for the Brighton one was bad, you should have seen the unedited version, so apologies for that. We were by the seaside. Now we're after West Ham and feel very deflated, and now my mojo, trying to work all that out really. I thought we were appalling, and it annoyed me more as any game since Liverpool, because you could see it coming, and I feel very frustrated, and I feel like, yeah, we've hit a wall, but we're making the same mistakes, we're not shooting, so many not thinking it through, and then we don't kind of even take the corner at the moment, and it's like, it annoys me, and yes, some of that is on Ten Hag, but I love him, so keep saying, you know, it'll come good, but you should have made those subs. I get the squad is limited, but we've got to be doing better than that, and yeah, we've seen it for donkey's years, that teams raise, you know, they've only had 34 points before today, they've raised their game, but I thought, if we can't handle intimidating atmosphere in Seville and here, then what hope have we got? And it's like, and now I've joined the full-on Paul pessimism party. I'm not talking the unmanageable in you know when. I'm talking about getting top four, and like, I speak to a good lot. The best performance today was twofold. One, the travelling support again, Thursday to this. Drained and good reds, you know. Going, I'm knackered this season, and the Thursday, Sunday, and I'd say our most effective thing in the striking box today was that stretcher car. That was more effective, and you may as well have kept it on in a United shirt and pumped the ball up and hope we'd get a ricochet, because that was more effective than we had today. So, yeah, you know, we weren't in it. I just sometimes always have that aimless hope, yeah, we'll come back in this. But from being 2-0 at Spurs, just, when was it? I'm losing track of games. I didn't go to loads, and now I've done 5 in 15 days or whatever it is, and I feel absolutely knackered. And we'll get on later to other things, but I just think that was appalling. That was unacceptable when you know something's going to unfold like that, and you know you will, we know there's a weak underbelly, but come on, where's the experience like going to Bruno? You know, that shot at the end. Casemiro should be having a word saying, it's not all about you, Bruno. I get that we've been crying out all game, and Woot's chant, and it's just like, that was painful. Hello, Shane, just me and you. And you know what I saw? Sorry, Shane, butting in again. But the evolution of Woot, is. We knew he wasn't good enough, but his evolution is so bad, he's got worse.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick on him, but, and if anything, you know, he was, you know, he's trying. I just thought it was, obviously we didn't do one before the game and we had a nice drink, saw a few people, but the thing about today was, like, from the off really, there was, it just looked like there was nothing there, you know, at least at Brighton, I thought at times, you know, there was, the energy was there and it was just a bit frantic and disorganised, where today, like, I hate to say they don't look up for it, because surely they don't go out not wanting to win, but they didn't, they look very half-hearted. It's either a serious confidence dent or there's something, like, the inability to want to take on a player or take on a shot is, seems to be very stark in the squad at the moment, and not wanting to back yourselves against a team that's had a very, very poor season. You know, all right, they might be, they get themselves up for United, but you've got to get used to that, you know? So I thought, today was, you know, we keep thinking, oh, top four, we've got a bit of a cushion. Well, the cushion's gone now. Yeah. You know, it's like...
And Liverpool will win
Liverpool are 1 point behind. You've now got to... he's got to galvanise those players and pick a team that's going to win three games. And,
but where's that coming from?
And it's struggled to see at the moment. So, I'm not going to get into a panic about it, but, well, you'd like to think they can...
Don't panic.
They might say, but today was... I don't know, you come out of it, and if you're at a game... You get the emotion, like my lad Connor's just, you know, he didn't want, like, he's literally walked, he's gone off to get the train, he doesn't want to go for a pint, and because he's young, and it hurts him a lot more than maybe some of us that accept it because we're older and we go for a pint.
That hurt me today,
but it was absolutely, it was one of those games you think nothing's going to happen here, nothing. Like, there was a little flurry when the 8 minutes went up on the board, but it was very, very poor. And the thing that alarms me most is that, you know, in Casemiro and Eriksen, I'm not singling out, but like them coming back, you kind of think, well, actually,
yeah, we'll get
with
better.
Bruno, when we get better, I actually thought our midfield was terrible today. I really thought the midfield was, you know, my lad challenged me at one point and said, you know, they're literally running through us.
Yeah.
And you know, we can criticise defending for the goal, and but the defence were, you know, I thought Shaw and Lindelof, to a degree, actually done okay-ish in the sense that they were just left exposed time and time again. And I thought the midfield was very, very poor today. We know we're not, you know, we had a, I thought, you know, it'd be, you're at a game, so you sometimes get a bit of a different perspective. You're in a crowd, you've had a few pints, but I actually thought we had a bit of the ball at the start where, again, not clinical enough, and we had possession. I thought, you know, a clinical side would have turned that bit of pressure we had into a goal, but it was really, really worrying, I thought, and it just, you kind of, I think you said it coming out, it's the worst possible time to hit this form. And top, you know, we said top four of a trophy would be a good season. We didn't know this wild card of a cup final against City was coming along, which means an awful lot to the support. And suddenly you're going into this, well, actually, top four was in the bag. It literally was in the bag, you know, a month ago, and now it's potentially slipping away, and you're thinking, you're making real pressure on yourselves now for top four. And if you play like that in an FA Cup final against Manchester, like, the only naive hope I've got at the moment is that they're going to muster something for the big game. You know, it's like, is there something they're holding themselves back for? But at the moment, it's a big worry.
Get my head around that, because the angst I've got, and then it's just been intensified, because I always thought we can put that to bed and just focus. Wolves, I think what we're doing now, players certainly is like, oh, the home form will get us through. But Wolves, you never want to play any season ever, because we hate it and it's the drabbest and it's got 1-0 to someone written all over it. But I would say, we kept saying, like, we're going to crawl to cross the line. We've hit the wall right now.
Yeah.
And we've gone from the League Cup final, which we said, like, and I get, like we said, the League Cup final, you know, get over that line and that will see us impetus. But that's ended. And I know we've played 36 games since the World Cup, so they're knackered. They need that 5 days off now to come back refreshed, because I don't want to see any more shithouses. But what I thought today, the overriding thing, and I am angry about Connor, was we've still got so many shithouses in our side.
Yeah,
who bottle it? Yeah.
I said, like, you know, go back a year on a podcast under Ole, and then Rangnick, look, you know, the mental resilience is very weak and fragile in his side, and I naively thought that like a miracle worker, Ten Hag had like magically fixed that. Now the players he's brought in, on the face of it, obviously we're missing Martinez, and I'll come back to him in a minute because he does, it's not his defending in his fight, it's the way he gets the ball forward quickly that I think we're missing at the moment. But anyway, you know, he's obviously mentally strong and that lifts the rest of the team. But what's come up, you know, particularly since, you know, you look at Seville and you look at tonight and you look at the games in between, like Spurs, you know,
we're
fragile, and
we're
teams, it looks like, and we've gone back to what, like I remember we, like, you know, back in the start of the season when we started to get some form, we had a scrappy 1-0 at Southampton, but it looked like, no, when we're under pressure the team's not going to crumble, whereas now one thing goes wrong and it all seems to fall down. And yeah, when they scored, it looked like, well, that's it now. It's like, you know,
bit intimidated against weak. You know, weak. Yeah. They are across the set. I will say, like, I've been all season, you know, I'm so Eric-y. So it's not that, but we can discuss that he's got a lot of, clearly, he's got a lot of himself improvement to work on. Because you can't keep doing this away from home. Yeah. You dig in, you get points. Like, to be 2-0 up at Spurs, say, in that three-game run, to be in a position where you could blow it is like horrendous.
Yeah.
And it's like it has echoes of the recent past, which I thought we'd eliminated from us.
And, you know,
we can go
attack it. And I was just actually thinking, walking out the ground tonight, that it felt like as bad a performance. It feels like going back to the start of the season or 12 months ago, back in the last season. It just looks so hapless. The players just didn't. I think it's just the body language where players that have played well this season today and just look like, as I say, I can't say they don't care, but they just look so bereft of confidence and this lack of, you know, you're chasing a team that just like, you know, we were like jokingly now, I feel a bit embarrassed to say it, we said in this podcast flirting with a title back in January. We're now playing a team that's flirting with relegation. And we're chasing a goal, and we're just playing the ball sideways across the back.
Yeah,
and no one's willing to gamble on a pass, gamble on taking a man on. Because and I'm thinking, why are these fellas shit scared of? You know, they should back themselves against man for man against that team every day of the week. They play for Man United.
I do think Declan Rice. I do.
Yeah, well, today he looks good. Today.
He drives the team. But what pisses me off is like, whoa. You know, knowing his limitations, but if you have him in the team today, then you play him and use him. And what you do is you play it forward to him. But it's like we had Wu, and then we don't play it forward for him to keep the ball or try to. And what pissed me off is Martial. You know, he had nothing to do. He did what he usually does. At least the gloves were off. But what I would say is when you've got Marcus Rashford, who scored 30 goals in a game like today, where you're going, oh, I'll bring Fred. Isn't it better to say, the man who's actually in a team that doesn't score, I will put him up top for that last 15 minutes? Because he's the one who's actually in form and scoring. And it's like, we can eke out, don't get me wrong, like for 2 months, we were raving about Ten Hag subs and we were going, look, they're a masterful Barcelona period. Oh, he's come. And now they seem horrendous. And that's because we're caught in this frenzy. But you cannot have a thing where Spurs, I'm losing track of when Spurs was. Was it last week?
It feels
like fucking a month ago. Yeah. But it's like everyone would have got home who's travelled from Manchester and they would have got back at 2 in the morning and then they've gone to Brighton and they'll get back at 3 in the morning. Well, and then tonight, and it's like
with some of the Irish Reds, you know, they were in Brighton the other night and they've flown home, seen their families for a day and they come back and they haven't and caught the time of this kickoff yesterday night. Now, I know players not robots, but dear me, it was a poor show tonight. There's a few things. I think with the subs, in fairness, if you looked at the bench, you're looking, well, who can come on and change the game? Well, you're not backing that bench, really. And I think Garnacho's the only one that you're looking at.
If you bring him, then surely you put him on.
And the fact of the matter is, he must have been just like unfit. There's no way. And then you think, well, why did you put him on the bench if he's not fit? Because only, like, you'd have to be literally, you have to be drugged if you thought, you wouldn't bring him on today. Because if you want to chase a goal, that's the fella you bring on. So he clearly wasn't fit.
But
so
what, their mentality is like, I don't want to push them back. So, but I get that, especially for people who want reason, nuance, and I'm a bit in the Ollie like period where I could see he does no wrong. Yeah. And I'm definitely like that with Eric. But it's like how all the coaching I've seen us recently, Spurs in the last minute, play a short corner. Today, criminal that Bruno was caught offside at the end from our own corner. It's like, that has to, well, you have to let them know. That's not acceptable.
I was kind of joking to you, like, it's a bit, like, you know, listen, my managerial experience is being assistant manager of like an under 16 side. So, yeah, I'm not going to start pretending I'm a football genius, but there's some basic stuff about, like, you know, you get a corner, the crowd goes up. A corner is, you know, we seem to have the most complicated corners. Now, clearly it's worked on a training ground, and you know, but when you you've tried everything all game and nothing's working, surely you put one in, and every time we do a complicated corner, half the time it like that one was offside extreme, but half the time it goes back to them. And the other thing that baffled me a bit is like, you never got, I can't do the root thing, by the way, but you got Weghorst, who's like the, you know, nearly, you know, 6.5 foot player. You think, well, actually, you know, we're chasing a game. Before he gets subbed off, you think, loft one in there, surely, you know, it might bounce off his head and the scraps fall rash, but no, we play a short corner.
No, use like, the stretcher cover.
Short corner, and as soon as Val goes off, we start putting balls in. I'm thinking, well, this is baffling,
But and in that period, there was, in the Bonhomie, only football can do this to your mental state, that we were in here, whenever, was it 5 hours ago, saying, the master plan is Voot is going to score us the winner in the FA Cup final. That's like the purpose of his third goal. The third goal in a 5 month run is pretty, but it's not, you know, like, so many mistakes are creeping in. But I maintain, if we don't make top four now, we don't deserve it. You know, so if you blow it now.
It's a huge, now, like, getting top four at the start of the season, we would have said, you know, it's a big ask, not a big ask, but that's what you'd expect, but it would be a good season for him. But I think to blow top four from where we were, will actually set him back big time. Like, you know, it will put a lot of pressure on it.
It's
like,
set me back.
It was in the bag. Like,
it'll set me back.
Like, you know, as me as a big defender of the manager, given time.
It'll set me back in years.
This knee-jerk stuff of support, you know, I get a bit protective, but there's not really much defending it, because that was, you know, we should have secured top four.
We trust them, how much before, we like them, you know.
We could say they're tired, but let's not forget that West Ham are still in a European trophy. Mm. So, you know, they're probably, you know, I know they, you know, flirt with relegation, but at the end of the day, like, they can be up for it, and they've got their eye on another competition. Fuck, what does it say for these players? You know, top four, these players should be fucking busting the gut for Champions League football.
For weeks and weeks, I've been saying in my head, we'll be okay. And even after Brighton, it's like when Paul was saying, I thought, no, we'll be okay because we'll get that point somewhere. And now you think, Chelsea will come to us, Wolves will do Wolves on us. And don't get me wrong, if we win next Saturday, but you can't do this away from home. Because suddenly, if we don't have the home form, then...
We can't. Well, the basic thing is, we can't, like...
I hate football sometimes.
It might be all right. It might be all right, but we can't, like... What the last few weeks you said is we can't trust these players.
I've got a street party tomorrow where I've been told to be on my best behaviour.
I wouldn't do any of that. The car thing, like, even McConnell, who's usually like, get up, he said, oh, that fella, you know, this must be a serious injury. He was down for ages. Fucking buggy comes on, you're thinking, Jesus Christ, you know, it's like on the. And then he gets up and he just strolls aside. It's like, what? Like,
has anyone ever gone off on that buggy?
I don't know.
Where do people in the mall who've been queuing for 4 or 5 days have a poo, Shane?
I don't know, but I think the queue in
there's
there.
There's Portaloos.
Yeah, when in the Queens, like when the.
Yeah, but Buckingham Palace doesn't have Charles can, doesn't go come in and you can use the bus.
You can walk off and.
Can you?
Well, you can walk up and people keep your place in the queue in there. Oh, so when they're just camping out in the mall. Yeah. Oh, I haven't watched any of it, actually. I don't really want to get into that.
Right, you did say there was a mental queues to get in and they were searching us, which was farce. Like, we got searched twice, and then Shane did make me laugh and he went, You'd have to be fat on the Whitbread. Why are they searching us? It's such a
appalling. Because you can't throw, yeah. How would you throw a missile onto the pitch? My thing was, Jeff Capes would never, like Fatima Whitbread, the only, I was thinking of athletes of the 80s that could throw something that would get onto the pitch at West Ham. He's so far from it. And I thought even Jeff Capes, you know, I don't know if he was the strongest man in Britain, but he was. Maybe he was a shot player.
Was Jeff Capes a shot player?
Was he not? I thought he was a shot player, was he? Maybe I got that wrong.
Or was that Big Daddy?
I thought Jeff Capes was a shot player. Well, apologies, I've got that wrong.
Was Big Daddy fighting Jeff Capes?
Pardon?
Who did. Oh, that was Giant Haystacks.
Giant Haystacks. Now, Jeff Capes was a shot player, wasn't he? This random thing was like. But I said, if it's fat, like. I was basically saying we're a bunch of Jeff Capes. None of us could throw anything onto the pitch. But if you saw Fatima Whitbread, anyway, that's probably lost a lot in translation. But I'm going to jump to my hate of the week while we're at it. I guess it's because I take my son and I've seen, you know, with United having a bit of an influx, which is good, of young fellas following them. I wasn't at Brighton, but I heard it was bad there as well. But you know, Spurs last week and today, you get London, especially this weekend with the coronation. There's a massive city, millions of people live there, visit, blah, blah, blah. And it seems that the Met and or the football clubs deploy all of the sniffer dogs for the away ends at football grounds. And for the last two or three games, basically, you know, let's not be naive. If you've been... Like, if you put a sniffer dog, it's going to sniff drugs on, like, a large percent of the population. And the last few games, they've been weeding pulling young lads out of the queue at the turnstiles and then doing, big searches and, threatening, like, you're not getting in, taking tickets off people. All right, if the lads haven't got anything, they're fine. But it's like, why is that? Like, people going in, there's no bother. Like, you could go into the city of London, like take the sniffer dogs around the pub at Liverpool Street on a Friday afternoon, and you get your seizures of coke, and it's just, I don't understand this persecution of the football fan again, and young fellas with where it's more serious. Just thought today was very sad. Lads got pulled out left, right, and centre of the turnstiles for no apparent reason. Got searched. Had to take their shoes, like at Spurs, and make them take their shoes off in the wet. Like, what's that?
So like, you're up for my buying a sniffer dog on eBay?
Well, I'll train it to. What would you buy it for?
To find drugs and then sell them. Yeah, like Breaking Bad.
But this persecution,
Brighton,
it's like what
the
they did.
The thing was such a farce that when Pat came on and he went, he meant to say the Eric transition, and he went the Eric transaction. I thought we're making so many mistakes.
I do have to apologise for the interview. I did listen to that podcast back, and I was a bit like, I don't like listen to myself at the best of times, but I thought it was a bit embarrassing. I was a few gins in.
You're looking at me. There's no such thing.
We was a few gins in. I had a rant at Ben Fogle and all sorts of random things. Fortunately, Nathan cut it before we got onto the beauty of Ladies' Fires. That was a good.
I don't like this ground. I don't like the huge space by the away end. I don't like how high the second tier, which I always seem to get at. I will say that Shane, we met for a pint, and he went, "I'm in a bar in the shopping centre. If you don't mind, shopping centre." So I said, "Well, I do like Dawn of the Dead." Meaning the 1970s George Romero film, for anyone who's never watched it, a classic.
I've heard of it.
And he went to the pub, up to the bar, and said, "Have you got a pint of Dawn of the Dead?"
I said, "You don't do a beer." It was like a craft ale place. I said, "You don't do a pint called Dawn of the Dead." And the bloke goes, "It probably is a beer, but we don't serve it." And I think he was being gracious.
To happier times. I'm not going to end it with we're blessed to support this team, because we are, but not on a night like tonight. But we will say, obviously, it was the 30th anniversary. And I'm going to ask Shane, because he's got a good story about a lad who celebrated it in the middle of the road, 1993. Two things from it. One was Palace. I actually cried. Well, I cried at Doctor Who, but I cried because I knew we'd do it, and that was a huge thing. And that whole period was propelled. And the only shame—it's not a shame because we were giddy—but I wish we'd done it ourselves. But when Oldham beat Villa, we had a mental party in Camden, and No,
Albany. Sorry, got my. This is so memorable. I forgot the thing. We had a mad party in the pub in. No, because that's why we went Holborn and then Camden. But so basically, me and Mum had sorted the coach for Blackburn on the Monday, and I think he was due to pick us up at 11. And then we were quickly on to, can you pick us up at 8? So we got to Old Trafford, and it was a massive celebration. There were so many people around. Everyone wanted to get to the ground early. Everyone wanted to have a taste of it. Everyone was buying every tap there as ever. I should have sold Red News in the thousands, but I was too busy, giddy. So,
well, the season before, I remember, like, oddly, I worked in London, and we used to work with fellas for Watford seasons ago. You sit opposite each other at work. You know, he was the only fella in the office that would regularly go to football, and I was going to football, and you know, he. The season before, it sounds ridiculous now, but I remember as like a bloke in my sort of, you know, earliest 20s saying, I just want to see us win the league once. And at that time, I genuinely thought I might not see it, like after 92, I just want to see it. So it was euphoric, but yeah, Rooter would obviously live down south, and Mum's family are all up to Manchester, but you know, so they were on the phone. But I remember when they won it, like my Uncle Charlie phoned. It was like, it's great. And I wasn't out drinking, but I remember driving in the town. I was talking, like, John, who runs like a great, like, loyal branch from go up from Ramsgate, the Invicta Reds. I'm getting giddy now. Shout out to John, but you know, he's run that for years and years and enabled lots of people, and they travel from one end of the country to the other. Every single game. Anyway, there was a lad that used to go over and called Fat Pat, and myself and John don't know what's become of Fat Pat, but he was a right character. And I used to go by train, but the lad used to go on the bus, and Fat Pat was a bit of a character in the town I lived in, and he used to go up with the Ramsgate lot. And all I remember is I drove around town afterwards, and we have a ring road that circles the town I live in, and just randomly, there's no United connections there. There was Fat Pat was just walking down the middle of the ring road with a flag wrapped around his waist, a United top on, the big flag behind him, cars tooting, giving him dogs abuse. And he just didn't give a fuck. He was just like, tell everyone to fuck off. And he was just, the elation on his face, he was pissed as a fart, but the elation on his face, it was like... It was just a surreal moment, and you think that in the middle of sleepy town in Kent, he walked around.
To have Anfield, and I thought I'd never see it. Never thought. And I will say, like the thing that Palace are scoring, it was like written in the stars. Sometimes this club plays to you know what in June. Yeah. Sometimes it is written in the stars for this club. But do you know what? Going back to hunger, which we don't have in abundance these last 10 years. What I loved about that was us fans were like, well, we've won it once, we can die happy. But Fergie is hunger. Yeah. And then we went to Norwich, I think, opening game of the 93-94 season, and we won 2-0. And I think Robbo might have scored. And their fans were quite gobby that day, and there was one there in Liverpool kit. But what Fergie went with that day, he went marker, and he went, win it again, win it again.
I fell over the wall in that game.
I
fell over a wall at that game. I'm not I'm a man. I'm a lover, not a fighter. But they were gobby, and when we come out at the end, they were like
one of the Liverpool kit on.
People, you know, you get fans of any club like facing off with each other. Only a pocket, and I was just absolutely coming out, and a few United lads decided they'd had enough and ran at them, and I got dragged along with them. And the next thing, the police come in, and I had to jump over a wall, and I spent. We were going out, and like they probably, and I had to go out with I had all mud down the side of my leg. I remember it because I fell over a wall trying to escape the police. So it was a bit of a haunting thing. Yeah.
Fergie's hunger. Now you get hunger out of this lot. So many. But
it's only like when like we all knew how great Fergie was when he was there, but when you look back, what even the greatest teams have come since, you know, and like. City or a machine now, whatever. Liverpool couldn't sustain it, but it was relentless, and Fergie's drive never coming out of the top three ever since. You know, it's like it was just relentless.
It was relentless.
And the fact that he could, and you look at there's been videos doing around this week and the team talks and the thing afterwards, you know, and it's still against Blackburn. you win the game. Make sure you win. And it's just that relentless drive.
We don't go for success or hunger, but you know, like the ABUs, and even today, they're giddier than and the teams are, but we should be able to handle that. But sometimes you think, just, I want selfishly, going back to your conversational questions, I want to make people sick of us by properly doing things again.
Yeah, no, and it was just, we was in a pub, we'd done one of these podcasts, and I've never mentioned this, it's not like it's a, but after we were giddy, a bit pissed in the pub after the Newcastle League Cup final. And we were counting United are back, and I was saying, United are back, and it's embarrassing. And I'm a bit embarrassed I said it now. But we did, you've got to celebrate the moments. But I'm not going to go into all doom and gloom. In the round, it's still been a good season. But if we don't get the top four now, it looks a very different season.
Yeah, but was it you or Nick saying you don't want to end the season on a proper down?
No, you don't.
Like a series of downers.
So you can't not get top four. And like now, if someone said to me today, now in the wider scheme, top four is everything. It attracts players, money, blah blah. But if someone said to me today, you can have the FA Cup, you have top four, I'll take the FA Cup every day. Beating City, but. If we don't get top four,
we can't,
and we don't beat City, it ends up being Thursday night.
And I can't be.
So I think
my United head is wobbly. Yeah. There's a couple of other things like, and then I'll get on to. Have you got any final thoughts?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think of a positive. I can't really. The positive is that it's still in our control.
Well, do you know what I thought? I said this, I think, on Thursday. Positives weren't not getting battered anymore. That's not a positive. That's shameful. We're only...
But we would get battered if that
was... I will say, onto the and none of this mattered, but, like, we've lost a legendary Red in Tom McCoy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, on a personal level, such a lovely man to me from a very, very relative young age, has always helped Red News out. The dinners... The 606 Red News dinners, a major part in helping to keep Red News going, and just a person you wanted to sit and Sharon, his good mate, said you'd sit there and listen and you'd think it felt like you were there, and there can be no greater testament. But not only because there's people who tell you stories, but it was a fantastic human being, and he has fought so valiantly for so long, and I'm glad he's not suffering, but I'm absolutely devastated because 78 is still, to me, should be considered young, and I wanted Tom to be, but the outpouring of emotion, and I was watching Garden as well from Friday, and why this is relevant, because it sort of helped me during lockdown not go totally over the edge, and it went like gardening is for mind, body and soul, what the importance of it. And I agree with that because it's helped me. And I then started to cry because it was obviously about Tom. And I just think, and I'm going to play now when we spoke to him 5 years ago because his memories are the babes. And I know there will be so many Reds who would have come into contact with Tom, who loved Tom, who meant so much to Tom, or heard or read his stories. So Tom.
The testament to him is, of all these days, or many WhatsApp groups, United to Broadchurch. I've got lots of groups of United friends or associates and people I've met that don't necessarily all know each other at all. But the one common thing, today was that all of them knew Tom Clare, knew who he was, had listened to him or had met him, for the dinners or for United. And in some ways the fight that he put up, it seemed to me that Tom, cancer for many years, but the fight that he had in him, and it always we keep fighting, it says a lot about mental, the power of the mind that he had, which is terrific. But as you say,
I said a few of the last pleasure, year, there's stoicism
of listening and, listening
and,
talk,
and an inspiration to have what he was dealing with, and he'd say and he'd downplay it, he'd mention other people less fortunate than him.
But the other thing was, if Tom was watching the game tonight, he would always post on Facebook, that result would have meant a lot to him, and it would have dearly, you know, he would have been upset because he cared about United. But also, I kind of like you just saying it there, it makes me realise, let's put it in a bit of perspective. You know, Tom will be telling us now, pull yourself together, you know, like United, you know, we've been through worse than this, you know, it's like, so I think it does put a bit of perspective. But he was a great, great Red, and a great, you know, we talk about top Reds and all this kind of nonsense, but he was a real, real, and a man that bridged, you know, what is the, you know, the definition of United with the Babes and this kind of stuff. He kind of, as you kind of alluded to there, he kind of brought that to us. He talked about it in a way that meant that we could understand it. We could kind of hear firsthand what that team were really like. You know, what the players were.
Like,
yeah.
He wrote something about growing up and his oh, just, you know,
yeah,
just
bless
very, very sad.
And loves
very,
to share all.
I'm going to play Tom next. We were in Mother Max, which, like, was special to him and obviously special to me from my mum, who was a regular there at games. And, like, he was an inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I will say, I hope, I'm sure that he's resting with his pains, you know. So,
God bless him. And thoughts with all of his friends and family.
Yeah. Jenny, Cheryl, and take care, everyone. So, I'm with Tom Clare, the renowned United author who saw the Babes so many times, and we've talked about this over a pint so many times, but just on how good Duncan was for you.
Duncan, when you look at his ability, his natural ability, and how consistent he was, I mean, you've only got to go back through his record as a youngster. He was playing county schoolboy football at 11 years of age. He was captain of the county at 12. He was in the England schoolboys team at 13 and played for 2 years and captained them. So, you know, that says something. But when he came to Old Trafford, his rise was so quickly. He didn't even play in the reserve team, you know. But his ability was unbelievable.
What was his greatest asset? Was it with the ball or just
for a big guy? He was very, very quick, but he read the game. He had two great feet. He didn't know which was his best foot. He could read the game. He was power, he was grace, you know. But he could control a game. He could take a game by the scruff of the neck, you know.
Yeah,
he had bad games, but his consistency was unbelievable. And at that time, to be capped for England at just 18 years of age wasn't enough. He got 19 caps, you know, and he was never ever dropped. But his appearance in the side, it lifted the side. You know, if you were struggling, you could rely on him to pull something out of the bag. I always remember some of the goals that I scored, and one was a six-round FA Cup tie against Everton in 1957, and Everton were a bit of a bogey side to the Babes. And he picked the ball up in the centre circle. There was no score getting towards the end of the game. And he started to drive forward. And they had a captain called Peter Farrell, a real good player, but as hard as nails. And he bounced off Duncan. And as the players come to play, he let fly from about 25 yards. The ball never got off the ground. And Dunlop, the keeper, who had a great game, was in the back of the net. And we were through at the semi-final. But he did that in a lot of the games. The goal that they show on YouTube against Germany, who were world champions, you see what he did there. He won the ball and then he just, his strength took him through. But he was no mug. He could look after himself, you know. I mean, everybody thinks of this gentle giant, you know, this fella who's big lad, but, you know, the boy next door, he was fucking hard, I'll tell you. He was as hard as nails, and nobody took liberties with him. And I always remember that Wolves had probably the dirtiest player I ever saw, was a wing half called Eddie Clamp. And Billy Whelan, you know, the Irish lad, the inside right, he was a brilliant player, but physically he was frail, and he would allow people to bully him. And this fella, Clamp, started to get inside him. And then, just after half-time against Wolves, there was a loose ball. and it was like a tank trap being laid. It was like a tank trap being laid, and all of a sudden Duncan appeared, and he hit the ball, he hit Clamp shot up in the air, and he come down and he busted two ribs. You know, Duncan stood over him. Look at the 57 cup final when Matt Parlin look at the first player on the scene. It's the only time I ever saw him come close to losing it,
right?
You know, because he was over it. But he loved to play the game, you know. He'd play anywhere.
I know we've talked about it, you know, but I just find it, well, it's incomprehensible for any generation that you lost those players when they could have achieved everything.
As Sir Matt used to say, if they'd have lived, they'd have won the boat race. That's how good they were. You know, but they had a lot of strength in depth.
Yeah.
You know, I know what people forget, Barney. If the accident happened, Jimmy got them to the cup final, you know.
Yeah.
The following season, we finished runners-up in the league. People forget.
Yeah. Well, look, and Bobby Charlton scored 27 or 28 goals in that season.
It was as though he carry the world on his shoulders, but some of the goals he scored, they were...
Tom. I mean, that must be how he...
The problem with Duncan is that if it's not on video or it's DVD, people today say, oh, well, he can't have been that good, you know.
Yeah. You saw it.
Talk to any people of my generation and look at all the records, all the accolades.
Yeah.
People like Finney, Matthews, you know, Billy Wright and everything. He was the greatest player at that time. You know, people say to me, he never achieved. He didn't reach it.
Yeah.
What I say to them, well, you've got to remember he played 180 games when it was a 42-game season. So you've got 4 years there at top class. He played at international. He played in World Cup qualifiers. He got two championship medals. He got an FA Cup winner's medal. He got five Youth Cup winner's medals. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's phenomenal what that lad did.
He's shaped your life as well, Tom. Yeah. You know, in terms of
the way he lived his life. You never saw him in the pub. You never saw him with a cigarette in his hand. He just lived for the game. He'd play any game he could. There was 1 year where he played for the youth team in the morning, and I think they were away at Huddersfield, and he played for the first team in the afternoon. You wouldn't even see it today. And you've got to remember,
and I presume the pictures must have been, we've got the photo of George Best now, they must have been even worse than
the only,
you know,
they were only on a nodding acquaintance with Grass during August. After that, it was gone. But they were glue pots. But it's physical strength, you know. He was just so strong. He was infectious. His love for the game. He would go anywhere for a game of football. And that's the way it was. For me, the tragedy of it is, if he had a limb, I don't think he'd have been happy, because he'd have been in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
You know. And one of the saddest things for me was Munich this year. We was going to the hospital and actually seeing the hospital room where he was, and talking to the nurse who looked after him, you know. And she said the big lad with the kidney problem, she said, you know, said he would not live. You know, so I doubt he would have been able
this
to
is
live.
So like sad,
that, you know. But the other side of it was, he was the one player that would have been able to unite everything. They could have built the team around him. Had he lived, they could have built the team around him. You know,
it's just a travesty of life we got, you know, robbed of
that
of a team.
That team, people. It's sad because you can't show people. The only full game I know is the 57 cup final, and that was ruined. You know, and they didn't perform.
Yeah, but you saw it with your own eyes. So we've got your memories. We've got,
you know, to see these kids come through. I mean, with Duncan, you had him there, the powerhouse, but he was articulate, you know, he could hit the ball short, he could hit it long, he was deadly accurate with what he did. His heading ability was unbelievable. And then on the other side, you had the compliment of little Eddie Coleman. You know, this little sort of 5'8" wing guard who could thread a ball through a needle, who had this uncanny body swerve and what have you. And he complimented him.
With the swift hips.
And in the middle, you had the big Yorkshire lad, Mark Jones. And he people, again.
But there were, with that... I mean, they're only names, and we don't. You bring them to
the World Cup 1958.
Yeah,
Brazil won it with Pelé. Yeah, and a wonderful player called Didi. 18 months before, they played England at Wembley, and England beat them 4-2, and missed two penalties. And Duncan, Roger Byrne, and Tommy Taylor played in that game, and Taylor terrorised him. He scored twice in that game.
How good was Taylor? Because I mean, the record
to me,
is
the best centre forward I've seen.
Really,
better the nearest than Law. Yeah, but different in their own way. But the nearest to Tommy Taylor was Rude.
Right.
Rude could score goals from all over.
Right.
You know. But Tommy, he was the first sort of centre forward that would drag people out of the middle. He was the one that would go out to win. And he had a great understanding with Dennis Violet. And he would make the space for Violet. And if you have a look, 55-56, Whelan, Taylor, Violet, 93 goals between them.
Because Violet's...
When have you ever seen anything like that?
I know you've done much to promote Dennis Violet's record.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's some who get forgotten, you know, the Alex Dawson afterwards coming in.
See, Alex was unfortunate. You know, the problem, when after the accident, all the young kids who've done the part, the pressure began to tell them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realise that within 20 months of the accident, most of those young kids were no longer at the club. But Big Alec, if you have a look at his scoring record with United, he'd stand up with
everyone. Yeah.
And he was another one, he was a tank.
How does it feel? You've obviously seen the game today then, Tom. How does it... I know you've mentioned, you know, they all just live with you, you know, and resonate. How does it feel going to Old Trafford?
Well, Old Trafford today is totally different. I look at players today that were out there that, with the babes, they wouldn't have got near it. I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I'm not being sentimental. I'm being honest. I look at Lukaku, you look at Tommy Taylor, you know, you look at Mata, you look at Billy Whelan. Billy Whelan, now here's a guy.
Yeah.
Little Irish guy, well, he wasn't little, he was 6 foot, playing from midfield, 74 appearances, 43 goals. And that's what I'm saying. They, as a unit,
yeah,
they were such a good team.
But that's because they grew up together. Yeah,
they did, you know. But they had match winners.
Yeah.
They had match winners all of David Pegg. And if he wasn't on form, Scanlon, Wilf McGuinness, Duncan's deputy. And what they used to do at times, if any Violet or Taylor were injured, they'd shut Duncan up front and bring Wilf in. At centre half, he had the rock that was Mark Jones.
Yeah.
But then if he had injuries, Jackie Branswell would come in.
What's your favourite memory? Is it the Bilbao game? Or?
Oh, without doubt. Yeah. The Bilbao game was unbelievable because that
the atmosphere that you've written about.
The atmosphere that night was the Barcelona game in 84.
Yeah.
It was terrific. But for me, that Bilbao game, it was the first time anybody had seen it, and it was that main road as well. And the atmosphere actually helped carry it. The Spaniards shit the same.
Well, you've written about. So I mean, you've cadge tickets. Yeah. Not cadge tickets. That's the wrong sort. But you've written about it. You've queued up, but you've also sorted out the
priest.
Yeah, you've sorted out the priest tickets.
You know, that was always
revised back to Tom's old writings in the mag and that. But you've sorted that out. What you're going into the ground? Yeah. That can't.
Well, I had a mate of mine called Brian Walsh. He lives in San Francisco now, and we used to go to games together. And that night, we went straight from school. School finished at 4:15, and where our school was where the old BBC studios used to be on Oxford Road. And we finished school, and we walked to Mainland.
Yeah.
Walked up Cambridge Street, past the Dental Hospital. All the way up Lloyd Street to Main Road, and the atmosphere, you could feel it. Everybody, you know, could they do it? They had the score for it without them scoring. Could they do it, you know? And the ground comes sort of 6:45, the ground is locked, and then rolls and everything. They just will them to win. When I got home, we lived in Chalton on Medlock, and my father was sat on the front step, and he said they could hear the roars from there.
So you can still visualise.
Oh yeah, I can remember. I can remember what happened in 1956-57. Yeah. Don't ask me where my car keys are. I can't. But there's so much of that era I can remember. But they were just infectious. If you look at the records, people forget United were the first English team in Europe. Yeah. They ignited the passion for European football.
Yeah.
And the way they were playing, that first year they won the title, they won it by 11 points, and that was the biggest margin from before the turn of the century.
We owe everything. We owe everything to the base.
This young team, you know, everybody wanted to see it.
Yeah.
If you look back through the records of that time, all the home attendances of the clubs was against Manchester United.
Yeah, yeah.
The records were there.
Well, lovely, Tom. You know, I can't.
They were just such a draw, you know, and they really were. And the great thing is they'll never ever be forgotten.
Never.
You look at a lot of teams, you know, great teams, you get forgotten. Edwards is still probably the most talked about player going.
Yeah.
You can't pay him a higher compliment.
It's a pleasure, Tom, as ever. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You know, it's great.